You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
Now, you know, comedians have long since said, how are being an adult and being in kindergarten identical? You know, we all like nap times and snack times and grilled cheese sandwiches. And speaking of nap time, you learn to really appreciate naps the older you get. But they say now, according to a new study, that naps, even in middle school, certainly elementary school and middle school kids, help them succeed. The research has been published in the Sleep Journal. That's a real thing. It's a journal that's called Sleep. Found a connection between a midday nap and increased happiness. Oh, you got that right. I can tell you that. You don't have to spend all that on research. You could just ask us. Yes, absolutely. And it included better behavior, higher IQ for fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, which I suspect are probably not in the mode of ever being in a nap, right? I'm just thinking. In fact, adding a nap to a school schedule even improve students' grades. Sleep researchers track the schedules of 3,000 kids. They were 10, 11, and 12 to see what happened when they got to nap during the day. And they loved it. They found the students who napped had more self-control and grit. Yes, higher happiness, IQs, and overall better academic achievement. I love that research. I don't know if it's such a good idea to talk about all that research.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
Who told you I was clever?
Oh, all your friends at the studio told me.
Oh, drat.
The Sound of Life.
Researchers were very surprised. They did a research all over the world because they wanted to see how people reacted to being tempted with money or lack of thereof. So basically what they did was they offered, they had a wallet, and they'd come up to a hotel desk, and they would say, listen, I found this wallet. I'm in a hurry. I have to go. Could you please take care of it? And they would slide it over to the person behind the counter. So then they would look at the wallet, and it had some typical stuff in there, grocery list, a key, and some of them had money in them. And the researchers figured, well, the more money that's in it, the more likely the person is going to be to keep the money. That is not what happened. And they were very surprised. We're talking about 170,000 quote unquote lost wallets in cities across 40 countries from Indonesia to Ghana to Brazil. They had a grocery list, a key, three business cards, the same mail name and email address. They had the same. And some of them had no money. Others had about $13.50 in them. People were more likely to return the wallet when it contained a higher amount of money. And the researcher said, gee, maybe this could guide people in filling out insurance forms, filling out IRS forms. I don't know how, but that's kind of what they thought. I thought maybe I'm going to get a $20 bill and keep in there. So if I lose my wallet, somebody will return it.
Who
right?
needs coffee when we got Cup of Joe?
The Sound of Life.
Nick Walenda was at it again. And when I say that, I mean, he has done major, major stunts on the wire, as they say. Now, he was born in Sarasota, Florida, but a big performance background he is, I'll tell you. He said, don't tell me it can't be done, because I will do it. Well, last night, he walked the wire across Times Square, 25 floors above Times Square, and his sister was on the other side coming at him. His sister is Liana, not pronounced the American way, but not spelled, rather, the American way, but pronounced the American way. But that was his sister, Liana, who went across. And, you know, the biggest thing, of course, is the fear. The biggest thing about watching him is the fear. I really would like him to do it without the tether. When he went across Niagara Falls, they went back and forth. Not only, I mean, you had Canadian and U.S. sides, but they wanted him to wear a tether because they said, man, if something happens, and he said, here's the thing. If I have to think about that thing not performing correctly, my tether, I'm thinking about something that I shouldn't have to be thinking about. I'm thinking about walking across the wire. I know that I'm not going to fall. You saw him a couple of times go over Niagara Falls when the winds kick up. Oh, man, I still get sweaty palms thinking about it. And he kind of crouches down, and he lets it go by. You know, that pole that he carries weighs him down onto that wire. He's on there. And then he said, hey, if something did happen, I know I'm going to fall. I can hold on to that wire until a helicopter can come and get me, until somebody can rescue me. I know that. So he's very confident he knows it. His big message is overcoming fear. Isn't that a big message? He describes himself as a, are you ready for this? Born-again Christian. Faith, he said, is the most important part of my life. Wow, he truly believes it's because God has given him this platform for a reason, and that is to glorify God, him with a capital H.
Hey, this is Danny Gokey, and you're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Ken Davis is a storyteller. He talks about himself, but he has a way that he tells stories. So does Pixar. You know the movies. Toy Story 4. Of course, it just came out, but all the Toy Stories. In 95, Toy Story came out, and it told a story in such a way that we were confounded. We didn't even realize what was happening to us. Adults sitting there with their children, both enthralled and enwrapped in this story. Finding Nemo. I remember when the curtain opened, I was sitting there with my sons, Finding Nemo open. I was stunned at the graphics. This was no ordinary animated film. It was incredible. But it follows the same storytelling line that Pixar has developed. And it's kind of the rules of Pixar storytelling, and there's like 22 of them. I just saw the video. I couldn't pass the test on it. But I do know some of the things about all their movies, like The Incredibles, Inside Out, that you've probably seen. They take people, or they take the characters, I should say. I'm doing it already. They take the characters, and they develop them. You get to know their lifestyle, you know, the neighborhood around where they live, some of the dangers that are involved, what their life is like. And suddenly, and then, of course, you get to know the main part of the story, which is their idea on something. In Toy Story, of course, in the original, it was, of course, Andy's toy, you know, the Woody. Yeah, can't think of his name. And, of course, he was the main character, and he had an idea. And that idea was that we've got one too many toys, that the new toy was a bad idea. This is not good for Andy's toys. And, of course, as an adult sitting there, you're thinking, I've been there. I've been there, done that. You know, you can see where they're going with that. And he became the villain of his own story. And it's the case in all of them, whether it's The Incredibles or WALL-E. The idea is going to be put to the test. And they're going to be in dire straits because somebody has to be saved. Somebody has to be rescued. And their idea of life, whether it's in Up or Toy Story, is going to be put to the test. And they're going to have to work through this. And it's not going to be easy. And it's not going to be what you are expecting to happen probably is not going to happen. They've built that into the story. It's very interesting, isn't it? But they're going to have to do it themselves. And they work through it. You know it's going to have a happy ending, because if it didn't, we'd never have another movie, would they? And maybe that's the reason that Toy Story 4 was not as well attended as they thought. You know, you still have that story, but I mean, how many times do you see, you know, first time I saw it in 95, and I was talked into seeing it by my brother-in-law, because he said I had to, and I was glad I did. And I said, that is one of the most well-made stories ever. And it's a real lesson. And that's why they're so enjoyable. But, you know, you've kind of got those same, we all know the toys and things and stuff, but there's always got to be a new wrinkle. So that's what you got to go find out. In case you're wondering, Toy Story 4 is rated a 4.5 out of 5 for family friendliness. So Pixar knows exactly what they're doing. They present a story in such a well-done way that the kids and the adults, parents sitting there, can enjoy it and like it as well, too. And by the way, I'm not getting a commission.
Love your broadcast. Love your show. Love the station. God bless you guys, and thank you.
The Sound of Life.
She started running. Wow. And they call her Julia Hurricane Hawkins. Julia, thanks to ABC News for this little clip of Julia explaining why she was run. Why she thought she'd run.
At 100, I started running. I thought it'd be neat to run at 100 and do the 100-yard dash.
Oh, that is pretty neat. Well, she's 103. She just won 2 gold medals in the 50 and 100-meter dashes. She competed in the 2019 Senior Games. They have those out in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And ABC News was there, and Julia Hawkins, you know, was explaining that at 100, she decided to start running. She says, you know, it'd be neat to run 100, run at 100 in the 100-yard dash. Yes, that would be neat, very neat. And if more people thought of that, I guess more people would take up running at 100. It's kind of neat. Now, you should know that she's a cycler. She's a big-time cycling person, so I guess it fit in. You know, she was already active. She picked up cycling in her relatively late, too, in her career. But now she's the oldest female competitor in the United States. The oldest female competitor in the United States, according to the National Senior Games Association. They don't call her Julia Hurricane Hawkins for nothing. So if you're going to do the dash to the grocery store, this 103-year-old is probably going to beat you. Kudos to her. Wow-wee. You know, people that I've seen guys in the gym that are like not even half her age going, oh, I'm just too old for this stuff. Really? Man, Julia, show everybody up and get us inspired to do something physical today. That's pretty. Get out there and be active.
The Sound of Life.
I didn't realize there was that much of a difference between children and adults. I mean, obviously the whole size thing goes and, you know, I mean, I'm talking about like a 1-year-old. And I didn't realize how God has equipped them with some very special attributes like taste buds. And I was very surprised. Children are born with 10,000 taste buds. That is double the number that you have. Babies are born preferring sweet-tasting food, the flavor of mother's milk with lots of glucose needed for growth. As their taste buds lose sensitivity with age, kids can tolerate bitter tastes like Brussels sprouts. But that's why when you give, you know, you got the little baby sitting in the high chair, everybody wants, hey, taste this lemon, you know, and things like that. No wonder that you get a response. They're feeling it twice the level that you feel it. So just remember that. All right. Weight loss. Oh, dear. Well, of course, you know, due to the high physical activity, children often have a higher metabolic rate or the rate of burning calories. They also have what they call brown. They have more brown fat that is good at burning calories to produce heat. I did the unthinkable. I mentioned the fat word. In that, but they burn calories. You know that. They can eat whatever they want. We kind of know that, you know, all the way up through the teen years. Seems like they just, nothing bothers them, right? They just eat whatever. It just, Brussels sprouts, chocolate cake, it all goes together. A baby's brain is constantly soaking up new information. Kind of knew this. We knew children learn things. They can learn things a lot quicker. It's absolutely true. They have 100 billion neurons. In their brain, which is as many as adults have, and it is constantly adding new connections or synapses. Those are connections. By age 1, the number of synapses peaks and then decreases. I've been decreasing for a long time since 1. Well, the brain purges the weaker connections. Ooh. So I guess it's very important to learn certain things by the time you're 1? Really? At 1? Wow. Amazing. And here's the other thing, hearing, and you probably realize this, if you've got a baby in the house now, you know this. Kids can detect sounds at higher and lower frequencies than adults. Babies can also listen to all frequencies simultaneously. That's why you can never sneak by a sleeping baby. Eventually, they learn to focus on what is pertinent, like the friendly adult in a crowd offering candy. I'm not making this up. It's true. And then finally, there's I don't get this, though. There's a larger body surface area. The ratio of skin to size is much larger for kids, so they cool down faster. I got that. But that's why kids can catch a chill or dehydrate when adults feel fine. So they cool off faster, I guess. But I never could understand what makes a child go out in 30 below weather with no jacket and seem absolutely fine. I don't know.
It's Cup of Joe Morning Show.
With Joe Hunter.
I'm just getting warmed up.
The Sound of Life.
I want to encourage you, mom and dads, putting in time and effort in your child, because they sure do appreciate it. I wonder if Giannis's dad knew that he was going to do that when he got the MVP in the NBA, and he became very emotional talking about it. He said, every day I step on the floor, I think about my dad. And I wonder if his dad was like, wow, I knew I'd sacrifice a lot and put in a lot with him and things like that. And I'm very proud of him, of course, but I didn't know it was going to affect him like that. When Zion Williamson, the star at Duke and just about every YouTube video since he came in a year ago, was selected as the number one draft pick in the NBA draft, he got very emotional talking about his mom and how she just really sacrificed so much for him. And I'm sure she did. But here's the thing, mom and dad, whatever it is, not likely that your child's going to get the NBA MVP or get the number one draft pick. These are big awards, yes. But they still feel the same way about you inside, what you are giving and sacrificing. They feel that. And someday it'll probably come out in the open, but I just wanted to give you that message. That's the way they feel.
The Sound of Life.
It's interesting, the things that your brain sloughs off and the things that it keeps, like the theme to the Beverly Hillbillies. I was like, why, you know. And you would think feeding birds, which my wife and I like to do wherever we go if we can, we like to set up bird feeders and stuff and enjoy that, and it brings us great pleasure, and that's the reason we do it, isn't it? Kind of, that's the way we think, and maybe that's the reason Irene Hodges was feeding the swans. She did it every day for like 10 years, and she spent a lot of money. I can talk about that. A 70-year-old woman has spent over $25,000 on bird food. That ain't nothing. I spend that on suet in a month. No, it seems like. But her regular feedings, it turns out, have helped save hundreds of birds. This retired woman started feeding the swans after the pools were drained back in 2009 to build a dam and improve the surrounding county park. And as a result of the work, the pond lost many of its, well, the tadpoles and the fish and the mollusk and stuff that the swans would eat. And a lot of them were struggling to find food, and she fed them and kept them alive. So it turns out that effort that she did was pretty important to the swans there, of course. So that's pretty significant. I kind of wonder sometimes if, you know, I feel the same way. Maybe they're endangered. When I see that particular woodpecker on the feeder eating, I think, if it wasn't for me, they would not make it. That's kind of the way I think.
Oh, you're on the radio a lot, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, this is Crowder, and you're listening to Cup of Joe Morning Show. It's my favorite. It's how you start your day, and you know, day is going to get better and better.
I know. One more time, I was thinking, do I mention the Walendas one more time? But it was a record-setting wire walk that they did. You should know that Nick and the other woman is his sister. Nick and the other woman's name is Liana. I think that's how you pronounce it, Liana. Walinda. They are the first time brothers and sisters or siblings have walked the same wire. And I don't know if you saw it or not, but they started on opposite sides, 250 feet, 25 floors above New York's Times Square. And they met in the middle. Now, what do you do when you meet in the middle? One has to step over the other one. I'm telling you right now, it's just absolutely amazing. But the thing, and I heard Nick Walinda talking about it, and his big thing is fear, overcoming fear. And it kind of does make sense, doesn't it? Yes. You should know that Nick describes himself as a born-again Christian, and he believes that he's been given this talent. It is a generational talent, going way back to the Walinda family in Europe generations ago, and he has carried it on. He was the one that walked the wire over Niagara Falls. It got a lot of publicity. And he's been working with his sister. Now, you should know that his sister was part of an act that, again, this is why I can't watch it, because they had one of these things where there, I think there were four of them on the wire, three of them on top of them, and two, and maybe one. They had this pyramid of people on the wire, and something happened, and they fell and stuff, and she got hurt pretty bad. Reconstructive surgery on her face was one of those things, and it took a couple of years to be able to come back. I think it was just, I mean, if you think about it, it was just 2 years ago. It wasn't all that long ago, and he's been working with her, and she overcame her fear. So that's one of the reasons it was very emotional for everybody concerned there, because of her to do that. It's hard for us to understand, but they have that talent. They know how to do it, and so they did it. And Nick said, you know, I've been given this platform, and this is what I want to do. God has given me this. He's given me the talent, and so I want to honor him. And he's already planning his next stunt, a walk over a volcano. That's what he's going to do.
You got serious thrill issues.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
I can't stop drinking the coffee. I've stopped doing the standing and the walking and the words, putting into sentence, doing.
The sound of life.
I don't know about you, probably. You and me, we think alike. If we saw somebody sleeping, first thought is, man, that guy's tired. You know, somebody sleeping on the subway or whatever, you think, somebody's beat. You know, we don't think that they're there just so that they can sleep in public. You know, I kind of like make sure they're okay. Are they okay? Do they need anything? This particular lady was visiting a fast food place and this guy's sleeping at a booth. And she went and told the employee, there's a guy sleeping in the booth. Oh yeah, we know. It's okay. And I said, no, not really, but whatever. And so she took a picture and she tried to shame him on Facebook. Turns out he was a McDonald's employee. Oh, I gave it away. He was an employee of the place, and he was between shifts, and he is homeless. So he didn't have a place to go to sleep, but he wasn't on the job at the time, you know, but she's trying to. But people came. Here's the really cool thing. People came to his aid, and he was hurt. Simone Childs was initially hurt when he found out his photo was shared, and he's a 21-year-old father. And he was telling a news outlet that he'd been having a tough time since his mother passed away. Kind of hurt to see my picture up there. You know, I thought it was something negative and nobody would care about. Well, the community came to his aid and he got to post his own picture that said a woman took a picture of a man asleep at McDonald's and complained on Facebook, and how the community responded changed his life forever. I'm not homeless now. Not now. Thanks to her. He said, see, that is exactly what happened. And there was a real lesson in the Bible of what happened to Joseph and how his brothers meant to do away with him. But what they meant for evil, God took it and turned it into something good. It happens every day on a level like that. So that's really a pretty cool story about that. And it makes you think. Maybe your first reaction, yes, your first reaction you can't, you know, is like, look at that, you know, and then you're thinking, well, you know, I wonder if they're okay, first of all. Is there anything that I can get them? Anything like that, you know, thinking about others. That's like the way God would see them. That's like, God, give me your eyes.
The sound of life is priceless to me.
The sound of life.
Something that happened at the jail. According to the sheriff, he said the entire culture of the jail has shifted. And it shifted because a church decided to change its local county jail system by bringing their church services to the local inmates. Now, they've only been holding services in the jail for 3 months. The employees and inmates of the jail say they have already seen noteworthy progress. The county sheriff said, we have a quieter atmosphere. There's no more banging and kicking and yelling and screaming. Now it's very quiet. They get along well. They treat the staff better. We have less incidents. It just complements the other things going on in the jail. It all started because the sheriff had worked with the pastor of this church on an addiction recovery initiative, and he saw that it worked pretty well. And so they decided, to bring in the church. And the church is really excited about it, to build bridges with the families that are represented there in the jail. The county sheriff said the miracle of that is something to behold. Mm-hmm. That's what God does. Absolutely. That's the work of God right there. The weekly worship services take place on Thursdays. They bring in the church, brings in the sound equipment, the chairs and the donuts, and the jail supplies the coffee. Yes, indeedy.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
There's something in the news that's going on. You've heard of goat yoga, which I don't even know a lot about yoga, much less goat yoga. But now there's reindeer yoga in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I was looking at the photograph of, people doing the stretches and things out there with reindeer eating grass beside them. Now, I don't know why you do that. It could have something to do with the bizarreness of it anyway. But that's one of the things that I like about some years ago I got into doing CrossFit. And I liked it because it brought back those exercises that we all did and dreaded when we were in PE class back in school. Push-ups, sit-ups, learn to love them, man. Squats. Somebody said, my legs are burning. I said, they're going to burn forever. You're always doing squats with something, some kind of ball or weight or something like that. But it brings back those things. It's amazing how you can work your physical body just with your body. It's just amazing. So anyway, but here's my yoga story, and I'm not judging or anything, and I know plenty of people that do it as an exercise, stretching and things. But I was listening to the radio one day, which is very unusual, years ago, listening to a talk program, and a woman was on there talking about her spirituality, which happened to be, I'm not sure, it was some type of an Eastern religion. I don't think she was New Age, really. I think she was like Buddhist or some type of Eastern religion. And the man interviewing her said, how did you get started in that? And she kind of chuckled and said, it all started when I started yoga. And I almost ran off the road. As one very famous pastor said, when you start playing around, quote unquote, playing around with things that have spiritual implications, spiritual things attached to them, be very careful. And he said, if you knew what was on the other side of that door, talking about people that play around with maybe even occult things, stuff like that. It's just a game we're playing around. He said, if you knew what was on the other side of that door, you'd probably slam that door shut, if you knew. So, but our curiosity, of course, gets us, and we think we know we can be in control and things like that. But I just thought it was funny. I don't know why people, I don't even let the dog come into when I'm working out doing push-ups.
Your daily dose of encouragement.
It's going to be like being at the beach, honey.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Speaking of exercise, maybe you're just getting started, or maybe you're exercising and all that stuff. Make sure you have music. Now, one of the things that it's kind of a double-edged sword. When you start a group exercise program, they always have music blaring, and a lot of times it's not really the kind of music you want to hear blaring. But the research has shown, and it's kind of an intriguing piece of research. I'm always making fun of research. People spend all this effort and money and stuff to research the obvious. But that's not necessarily so obvious, the fact that music helps people to work out, even less active people. But it has to be the right kind of music, obviously. I mean, it could be classical music. A lot of times it's just real loud and obnoxious rock music, but sometimes it is from the 70s. But anyway, the research showed that people who work out report greater enjoyment, and you exhibit an elevated heart rate and peak power in the session with music compared to the no audio. And the thing is, maybe you're working out and, you don't have that stuff. So, that's actually a good thing. And I used to make fun of all the millennials running around the exercise, running around the gym with earbuds in there listening to stuff. Now I'm one of them.
The Sound of Life.
It doesn't take much to get you distracted. And I realize I'm one of those distractions probably, you know, because the route to work is so routine every day. It's the same thing. And there's a caution that you have to be very cautious about that. And we are like that, aren't we? We're in that routine every day. Jesus showed that when he told that parable, very poignant story of a man who, like a lot of people in those days, unfortunately was traveling by himself. And he was in a bad spot in the road, and he got jumped and beat up severely, and all his stuff was taken from him. He was just left there. People that could do something about it just passed by, mainly because they had a reason that they couldn't. They did. They had a legitimate reason. Don't we all? We have a legitimate reason to just go on about our lives. And Ginger, and that's her real name, Ginger Jones Sprouse is her name. She saw a homeless man. She regularly saw this man standing on a local street corner. Now, like us, she's like, I've got routine. I'm in this. I've got to have this done. But at some point, she decided to do something different. And it turns out it was radically different. And I think God really used that and blessed that. They became friends because she basically took them in. She took him into her house. Am I getting the gender? Victor is his name, and he made national headlines in 2017 after Ginger invited him to live with her and her family in their house. And now Victor has a job and a home of his own. It's right next door to Ginger's. Amazing. And they call them the dynamic duo. And now, here's what they're going to do. They plan on paying their good fortune forward by using all the proceeds generated from their recently published book, which is titled Kinda Like Grace. That was really cool. Kinda Like Grace. So what they're going to do is buy a house for someone who may need a little kindness and a roof over their head. It's a simple thing, one at a time, one step at a time, making that decision. You know, you go on by in the routine and, you know, it just keeps on going. Life just keeps on going. You make that decision, okay, I'm going to do something for this man, and then I think God starts working. It's kind of like, I won't go down that path, but it's just like so many things in life. You make that decision, oh, I'm going to do this, and then it leads to this, and then it leads to this. And it leads to, they became friends. It worked out. He gets a job. He gets a house. They write a book about it. The money they're going to use to buy another house. That's a Shazam moment.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
So we were talking about exercising and getting back to the basics, kind of. It's kind of what I'm doing. I do a lot of pull-ups, push-ups, sit-ups, and squats all the time, you know, working with dumbbells every once in a while, stuff like that. You feel good afterward. Music is very important. We started group exercises. I'm old school. You didn't have a radio. I mean, you might have, but certainly didn't wear earbuds at the gym back in the day, you know, because you didn't have earbuds is why. So if somebody was playing music, I guess maybe they were, but you just weren't used to it. And now it's a common thing. It turns out it's good for you. Anybody, you start exercising or whatever, and maybe you run or you work out and you're not playing music, maybe you should try that. Motivates you, right, into doing it. And it could be classical music, could be Christian music, any kind of music you want. Your favorite music, you have to give it a try. Search around. One of the things you need, too, is nourishment, which is really big, and I'm big on trail mix. So I was kind of indulging in a little bit of that this morning, I'll be honest with you, because I had breakfast very early. So right about now, I start getting that little bit of a time for a snack. And I want to make it a healthy snack. And one of the things that I've noticed, and I'm just kind of pointing this out to the people who do the trail mix, you know. And I love the peanuts in there, but you have to be very careful in the morning when you're talking. I'm eating peanuts, you know, and you have almonds in there. They're awesome. I just love them. There's a lot of raisins in there. I noticed a lot. I mean, I've opened up a couple of packages this morning already, and the ratio to raisins, especially to the M&Ms that you put in there. It's a little, a lot of raisins. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I picked out all the M&Ms and I don't have enough.
It's Cup of Joe Morning Show.
With Joe Hunter.
I like him. He's silly.
The sound of life.
So I was talking about being on the train that quit out in Virginia. Well, this particular train back on May 30th stopped because of a power outage. It was in the southern part of Japan. 12,000 passengers on there. What happened was they didn't get any power, so they had to cancel 26 trains for that day. So there was a big investigation. What in the world caused the power outage, you know? And you start looking, I guess, at the big stuff, and you keep going, and there's no reason for it. And finally, you come to an electrical cable inside of a, quote, secure box. And there's something very strange going on in there, because they discover that a tiny slug, yes, I said that word, slug got in there, chewed on the wire, and, well, didn't fare so well after that. It got fried by the electrical current and shut down everything else. They admitted that they thought they were secure, and now they realize that these tiny little spaces make them not secure. So from now on, they're going to, when they inspect them and they see a little bit of a space, they're going to seal up those spaces. So there's going to be a lot of Japanese train employees walking around with some kind of caulking gun, something, you know, take care of little spaces. I just picture that. But it does lead to a real lesson there, right? And it's the small things that get inside, right? That maybe you think, oh, it's okay, it's fine. I'm talking about kind of on a spiritual level in your life, you know. Someone once said, you know, Satan's not going to come to you and say, hey, Mac, want to destroy your marriage, ruin your relationship with your kids, lose your job? Wouldn't that be fun? No. If he did that, you would say no. He doesn't. He's like a little irritating snail getting in some place that you think is okay, and then, you know, working away and in anything, everything ends up coming to a standstill. It can. So that was a kind of a real spiritual lesson in that.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
I've got a smile on my face and a twinkle in my eye.
The sound of life.
Did you know, and you probably, if you're a Yankee fan or a Boston Red Sox fan, you probably know that they're playing each other in a very special place, London. They're playing in London. I think maybe baseball went there years ago. Years and years ago, I think, from what I heard. But as far as I mean, not in the modern era anyway. But I'm bringing all this up because I get a video that was put together, but it was highlighted by Nick Swisher. Remember when he played for the Yankees? I love that guy. Always had a smile on his face. He had the greatest attitude of anybody I've ever seen in sport, or equal to it. And he's not with the Yankees anymore. To me, that was a sad day when he left, and, you know, it's kind of the way sports are. He must not be playing anymore because he's on that plane. And I thought, don't you have a team to go play to? Not Yankees, not Boston, but he's on the Yankee plane and he's doing a selfie video, a little short video, and he's all dressed up. He's got the tie on and everything. He said, look, I'm on the plane to go to London. Look who I get to ride beside. And he pans the camera over, and Andy Pettit is sitting smiling in the seat beside him. And he goes, and look who's sitting behind me. And he shows him, and it's Hideki Matsui sitting behind him. And he's just so fired up. And they posted it on social media, and they said, you know, you have got to. And I said, absolutely, I want to go on that. Just because to be with Nick Swisher on that plane, and his attitude is just lighting everybody up. I thought it was really cool and incredible.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
Good morning. Good morning.
The sound of life.
Talking about the baker who had a passion. He's saying, Michael Platt said, I've always loved to bake. And he's decided to use his passion as a means of helping the less fortunate. So what he does is, this is a great business model, and different people have done it. He's not the first to do it, but he's maybe the first baker. I don't know. Probably not. But he's launched a baking business called Michael's Desserts, And what you do is it's a one-for-one business model. So you buy a product, a, you know, muffin, and then he'll give one to somebody who needs it, an underprivileged person who can't afford it. It's a great business model. Some different businesses do that, and you probably know about that already. What's so surprising about Michael Platt and Michael's Desserts is that he, my friend, is 13 years old. And what? He's 13, and he's already serving up delicious treats. He's got the right idea, I'll tell you that. He was 11 years old when he launched a baking business called Michael's Desserts.
The Sound of Life.
The 28th of June. And as they say, they don't write songs about Volvos. 1953. Assembly began on the first Corvette in Flint, Michigan. Two-seater sports cars, of course, is an American icon. And there's actually a top 10 songs that have Corvette in them, and I pulled this from one of the top songs, believe it or not. I'd really never heard it before. But. So basically, the meat of the song is kind of describing the parts that are the most likely to function on a Corvette. You know what the initial price tag of this classic automobile was? And I remember seeing an orange Corvette convertible in the Chevy showroom in my hometown when I was a kid, could barely look over the door, you know, look in the car. And I remember the sticker on the car. It was higher than the original. The sticker was $3,490. Yeah, $3,490. Well, I'm tired of cost that now. But I think it was $5,200, $5,500. I remember looking at it going, ooh, boy, that's expensive. Wild.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
You're as funny as a cry for help.
The Sound of Life.
So, not long ago, we went out to Long Island, the family, and stayed. I won't tell you the name of the town because, boy, they know how to make money. Well, we stayed across the street from the, we stayed at the hotel, but we parked across the street. We should have taken advantage of the valet parking. That's all I can say, because they have a sign up that when, you know, you're looking at your GPS and looking around and you're not really clear where you are, you don't see it in the fine print, which tells you about the rules and regulations of parking. That is there so they can write you 3 tickets in one night for the parking. My wife wasn't really laughing all that much, but I said, you know, that's a real moneymaker. Parking tickets, obviously. Parking, paying to park, and then paying when you didn't pay to park is a way that towns and municipalities make money. Everybody knows about that. Probably scary how much. But when they decide to divert the money that would come in to a better cause, I haven't really said something, I would think, about the leadership of the city or the town. And Las Vegas, of all places, has approved a program, and it's only for a limited time, which kind of makes sense. You know, the program runs through July. We're in July, almost. July 19th. So if you're out in Las Vegas, I'm sure you'll get a parking ticket with your rental car. And here's the thing. You can pay it with school supplies. Isn't that kind of cool? Yeah, it's kind of neat. I mean, you know, they are unwrapped school supplies of equal or greater value to the fine. You bring them in and you say, here, I'm going to pay my parking ticket with these. They look and they do a little evaluation. They go, let's see, a case of pencils and notebooks, that should do it. And you know, that's the thing. So I thought that was real pretty ingenious idea, really, to provide for kids that need the school supplies through something that normally would benefit the town, you know, that ultimately benefits their town. They can see that. So I think it kind of makes sense. I would, and the thing is, you do, don't you feel better about paying the parking ticket? I know we would.
The Sound of Life.
Nick Walenda last weekend stepped out on the wire, as he does. That's his platform. He said, that's my gift from God to be able to do that. That's the talent I have, born into that family. 25 floors above Times Square, and he walked across confident that he knew that he could do it because his mind was concentrating on what he could do. See, it's not so much the adverse events that are making you anxious. It's the thoughts about those events. It's your mind engaging in efforts to get you to not think about what you can do or what God can do, but to get you away from it, you know. And Nick Walenda has openly said, he's a born-again Christian, and he said, I am concentrating on overcoming fear. He worked on his sister who had to do that, who was really broken up because of an accident, falling off the wire just a couple of years ago. And look what she did. I mean, that's amazing. That's a real testament to overcoming fear. And it's very simple, really. I mean, it's simple, but it's really hard. And I like the way somebody kind of paraphrased it one time. They said, so God is for you. Tell me again, who can be against you?
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.